Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney, you're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Seymour, and welcome to this week's FX Podcast. So I'm sitting in for Jeff Huser, who unfortunately has the flu, so we hope you get better soon, Jeff. Hey, this week on the show, I'm going to be talking to John Paul Smith, who's one of four guys from Imagineering who are receiving at the SciTech Awards, the Scientific and Engineering Award, or the Academy plaque, for their work in developing the planar tracker and rotoscoping software that is Mocha. Mocha is just an amazing piece of software. It provides obviously really good planar tracking, but it's extended out from just doing that. In fact, it's actually a number of iterations of different products, different versions over the years, and I'm going to basically discuss that transition or that history with John Paul in 1 second. But I sort of, obviously at PhD, we do training on a lot of products, including Mocha, and we have a course at the moment, MOC 211 version 3, and Ben Brownlee actually teaches that, and I thought I should use Ben's words rather than mine to describe why I thought the software was so significant, because he's using it every day in production. And while I've been familiar with it, Ben really knows it a heck of a lot better than I do. But again, his words, not mine. Over the last few years, Mocha has become such an indispensable tool for a wide range of VFX tasks. Solid tracking data is now the linchpin that holds our work together. Tracking that was almost impossible is now just a quick trip through Mocha. I can't almost remember the days when I didn't have Mocha to rely on. Actually, I can. They were a lot longer and they involved a lot more keyframes. And I think Ben really gets at the heart of this. This is a product that is so often used and perhaps not given the recognition that it deserves because it's earlier in the pipeline. We tend to look at final renders or final comp shots, but so many of those are only possible because of really great tracking data or really great spline data that's produced that allows for terrific roto work. Well, here now is my interview. I spoke to Ben a little earlier in the week, and we just discussed that history of the product and also basically how a planar tracker actually works. So firstly, congratulations. It's great to be recognized by the Academy. Well done.
Oh, thanks very much. Yeah, it's a huge honor for us.
So I was wondering if we could backtrack a little bit, because certainly when I first knew the product, it wasn't in its current incarnation. So maybe you could just give some of the history of how planar tracking and what we know today came to be.
Sure. So starting in the late 1990s with the two founders of Imagineer who were working together at Surrey University, and they were working on photomosaicing. So the idea of either waving a video camera around in a scene or taking multiple still photographs of a scene and then stitching them all together. And they tested their algorithms on a video of Stefan Edberg playing tennis, and they noticed that he disappeared. So they thought that was interesting, and around about, I think it was around about 2000, they showed that to the people they knew at 2D3 who developed Buju, and they said that that could be useful for wire and rig removal in visual effects. So in 2000, Alan and Phil founded Imagineer, and they started working on Moki. And I joined in 2001, and we released Moki that year. So Moki was the first product, and it took the idea of tracking planes in the scene and then using that tracking to remove foreground objects. So anything that moved relative to its background, provided we could get a solid track of it, then you could remove it.
So I think one of the first images I saw was a guy on a skateboard, and it really looked like you'd, you know, it was technology so advanced it seemed like magic.
Yeah, yeah. The skateboard is shot outside our offices here in Guildford. We used that test footage for a long time. Yeah, and it was still today when we demonstrate that object removal, it still blows people away. It, you know, it's even though the technology has now been around in the market for 11 years. So the Moki was the first product, and then we. So in that, we had the object removal, and we also developed a mat generation tool, which used the planar tracker and the object removal to do a kind of difference mat. So from there, we worked on the next product, which was Monet. And this, a lot of people really became familiar with planar tracking through Monet. And in this one, we released it in, I think, 2004. and we collaborated with Cinesite on this. They wanted to have a tool that would allow them to insert the paintings on the wall in the castle in Hogwarts School in Harry Potter in Prisoner of Azkaban. So they had lots of flickering candlelight and, you know, big camera moves through the big sort of stair area where that is, and they wanted to be able to track the picture frames that were on the wall and then insert the pictures.
There's a really important part about that that you just touched on, which was you already had the planar tracker technology, and I'll come back to that in one second, and this idea of being able to produce a mat, which, you know, just being able to sort of do anything to assist Roto was astonishing. But added as part of this idea of the pictures on the wall was putting the picture in, but keeping the reflections and the highlights from those flickering candles in front of it. And that was the kind of aha moment, wasn't it? It was really like much more than just, oh, well, I could do a 4-point track and put that picture in, but you weren't slapping on top of, you were sort of effectively putting in under.
Yeah, that's right. So in Monet, the key things that we had to do were, first of all, get the tracking really accurate. To be able to do this properly, we had to not just improve the planar tracker, but we also had to develop a tool called Adjust Track, which persists all the way through to Mocha today, that lets the user really refine the track. But then the other big thing that we did was, as you said, was the lighting. So we were able to use a variety of different techniques to analyze any reflections or shadows that were in the shot to start with, then subtract them out, insert the new element, and then composite those reflections or shadows back in over the top, as well as any, you know, larger lighting changes, like global lighting changes across the shot.
Now, this is an inherently difficult problem because there's, you know, sort of a number of ways you can approach that. I mean, obviously, in a perfect world, you've got something that you can key. It's a dark picture and a bright highlight on top, and you can extract it in terms of luminance or some combination of chrominance and luminance. And certainly optical flow hates this problem because it likes single motion assumption. How did you guys solve this? How did you go about it?
Well, the first thing is that those sorts of lighting changes, well, a lot of those lighting changes don't really distract our planar tracker. And that's one area where we had a big advantage over the optical flow techniques that were around at that time as well, was because we were looking for the dominant motion across a whole plane, meant that we could get a very solid track, ignoring small changes in lighting or things like that.
Well, maybe you should explain to everyone listening exactly what planar tracking does, because obviously we know what it does in an end result point of view. I mean, if I've got a sign, I can planar track the plane of the sign, but how is it doing that? Is it, it's, you know, some people I think would assume that it was just a whole lot of little tiny point trackers in the way that a 3D tracking program, you know, has a field of tracking points that it gives various weightings to.
Right. So our planar tracker is different in that, as you said, most trackers look for high contrast feature points in the image. Then they track those points through the sequence, and then they try to come up with a solution that fits those points. So we don't actually look for features at all. We're looking at all the pixels in the area that the artist has selected. So you draw a spline around the object you're interested in tracking. And we actually look at all of those pixels as one large object and try to find the best projective warp. So, you know, it's effectively a fork on a warp that fits the motion of that entire object between one frame and the next.
And that's central, isn't it? This idea of the projected warp as opposed to some kind of arbitrary shape that wouldn't... I mean, the planar part of the tracker is that's what it gets the name from. It's essential to the algorithm.
Yeah, it's a rigid object, effectively. So by making that assumption that this is a rigid plane that we're tracking, it means we can get a much more robust result.
So this is why the regionalized flickering is sort of weighted out effectively.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, if you get a flicker that covers, say, 10% of the area you're tracking, it's a really minor influence on the overall motion compared to the rest of the 90% of the object.
And presumably part of that is because the regionalized flicker in no way violates the planar warp that we've been talking about. In other words, it doesn't make it look like it's suddenly a different angle that the plane is to the viewer. It's an irregularity, but it's not an irregularity that goes to the heart of the planar tracker, is it?
Yeah, it's. I mean, sometimes you can get big reflections or things like that, which could fool the tracker into thinking this is actually a real change in appearance. You know, change in the orientation of the plane, for instance. But yeah, with small flickering light changes, you're right. It's just ignored effectively because it doesn't fit with the planar warping model.
So CineSight used this on what, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban?
Yeah, that's right. And we did a number of other tests with CineSight. But around that time, so we developed it for Azkaban, and then we released it as a commercial product, I think, in 2004.
Right. And still there are more products to come.
Yes. Many more products beginning with MO.
Yes.
Yeah. So the next product that we worked on was Motor. And this was where we'd been approached by the people who were making a stage show called Frank Sinatra at the London Palladium. And this show was lots of archive footage of Frank Sinatra singing projected onto big screens in the theatre, and you know, dancers on the stage and live orchestra, I think, and things like that. So what they wanted to do was rotoscope, cut out Frank Sinatra from all this archive footage, and so that they could project him by himself. And they wanted to do about 40 minutes of rotoscoping, I think, and they had very little time to get this done, and a very small team of people who were going to work on it. So they'd seen what we'd been doing with Moki and the matting tools in there and approached us and said, well, can you help us with this? So we then took the tools that we'd had in Moki to and Monet just to help you define a shape and actually broke those out and developed them further into a rotoscoping tool, and were able to deliver that show using, you know, some subcontract artists that we'd got who trained up just to use this tool. And then I think that was 2005. We then released it as a product, just to do rotoscoping. Then I guess the next product was Mocha itself, which is the product that's really got us known. And here we recognized that by this point, people were loving using all these different tools that we developed, but fundamentally what they were interested in and what made us different was the tracker itself. So in Mocha, we actually exposed the tracker so that you could track an object and then export the tracking result into other applications so you could use it for compositing or, you know, any kind of visual effects operation where you needed tracking data. And that was, you know, probably the most important thing we ever did since developing the tracker was actually allow people to export the data and use it elsewhere.
Hmm. And it was very influential for that reason. And of course, the thing about it is that once we've got the plane of the, say, the part that I'm being used, you know, that I've defined by my roto, I can extend the plane. So if I've done part of a wall, I can extend it down the wall. Like that was, it sort of built out from there, didn't it? I mean, it was like a lot that it gave you.
Yeah. So obviously, many scenes you can track one object and then you can transfer that tracking to anything else on the same plane. And that gets used a lot in roto, where if you want to track some object that's got many small parts to it, but they're all roughly on the same plane, then you track the thing that's best to track on that plane, and then you can just link all the other ones to that tracking data and, you know, make individual rotor shapes of that, just link them to the tracking data, and they will all move in the correct way.
So let me ask the dumb question that you must have been asked 1,000 times before. The number one thing someone's going to want to roto is a person, and the single characteristic of a person is that they're blobby and round and not flat. So surely the planar tracker wouldn't work.
Yeah, with people, basically you break them down into the rigid parts. If you just take the approach of drawing a spline all the way around a person, yeah, it won't work. It doesn't. It's not a rigid planar object. That's not something that we can track. So typically, people will track the torso, the head, and, you know, depending on how close you are to the object and how much accuracy you need, you'll track the upper leg, lower leg, upper arm, lower arm, hands, anything that's moving differently. But that's the
ironically, that's the guy on the skateboard we were talking about that went straight through frame sort of did act like a plane, even though, of course, he himself wasn't flat.
Yeah, so I mean that's one thing is you only need that kind of accuracy if you want to do roto, or if you want to say attach, do a head replacement or something like that.
Right.
If you just want to remove a foreground object, you don't need anywhere near that much accuracy because all you need is just a good garbage mat that covers the whole object. You really need an accurate tracking of the background, and the foreground is just a mat to define the area you want to remove.
And so by the time we get down to doing roto on faces, we're actually doing multiple shapes per face just to, because obviously one of the areas that the product will become, I don't know if it was being used for it at this stage, but certainly has become useful for, is that move for doing the rotos and the splines and all the things that we need to identify those things for stereoscopic conversion work.
Yeah, certainly faces is a very interesting example. And when we saw first customers using Mocha for stereo conversion, we were amazed at the level of detail, the number of roto splines they'd create for a face. And certainly your face close to the camera, where you really need to be able to create accurate sort of shaping on it, or you really be able to see the depth. It's that you've got different sides of the nose, the cheeks, ears, the eyes, anything that, eyelids, anything that's really at a different depth is being rotoscoped separately. And one of the things we did in Mocha V3 was we added a new tool to let you join together the corners of different rotor shapes. So if you're rotoscoping something like a face where you don't want any gaps between these shapes, but they're all at slightly different depths, you could then join together the vertices so it forms almost like a mesh across the face, but with each section of the mesh a separate shape and tracked with its own tracking data.
Which works very well because of the splines can fight against that otherwise, can't they?
Yeah. I mean, the splines would all be independent otherwise, and trying to manually line them up at the corners would be really difficult.
Now, Mocha is a part of Mochi, but there's still one other, right? Which is Moxel.
Oh yeah, Moxel. So yeah, I kind of skip over this sometimes. Moxel didn't do all that well, I have to say. It was
Well,
a product
that's
we developed.
Included for sentimental reasons.
Yeah, it was a product we developed really specifically for the Japanese market, actually. And it used the planar tracker to track an object and then apply a concealment filter on it. So, like blurring out an object or pixelating it so you couldn't see what it was. So, yeah, it was very, sort of very, another one of those areas where we took the planar tracker and then made a really very specialized tool built on top of it
So when you're saying
for a
obscure match, you
task.
literally mean like I don't want to tell the which sort of suspect is getting out of the car and being moved into the courtroom kind of blur out, right?
Exactly, yeah, witness protection type thing. And yeah, things like in Japan, if somebody's being prosecuted for something, they're going into court and they appear in getting out of the van to go into court and they've got handcuffs on. You can't show the handcuffs, so they have to track them and then obscure them because until they've been convicted, and then you can show the handcuffs. So
may I say, if the
sort of
rest of the world had the same presumed innocent until proven guilty, we might have had more success with this product. But as the rest of the world seems to enjoy seeing who's done things. So anyway, that product line, and there are a couple of other ones we've skipped over, which are more sort of plugins for various things. This all gets cleaned up at some point, which is why the Academy can recognize the work, because it really is sort of folding back in onto itself into what is today's product line, right? Which is a more simpler approach. Do you want to explain where we are today?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is something that people had asked us to do over the years was, well, we had Mochi and Monet and Mota and Mocha, and they were all built on the planar tracker, but they all had different tools on top of it and exposed different bits of functionality. So in 2010, we finally combined all of this together into Mocha Pro. And what that did was, well, with Mocha, we developed a new user interface and new project format and done lots of changes in the core architecture of the software. So we then ported all the tools from Mochi and Monet into Mocha as well, into that new framework. So we then had one product range, so Mocha AE, the version that comes with After Effects and that we sell that just works with After Effects. And then we had Mocha by itself, which was just tracking a roto, but we don't actually offer that by itself anymore. And then Mocha Pro, which had not all of the tools from the other products, but the best ones that people asked us for all the time were put into Mocha Pro. So so today we just have two products that we sell, which is Mocha AE, which is all of the tracking and rotoscoping tools, and you can then export the data to After Effects, Final Cut, Hit Film from FX Home, and a couple of other applications, and then Mocha Pro, which also includes the Remove tool and Stabilize tool.
So you might have to explain. You might have to explain Hit Film because that came out of left field.
Oh, okay. Maybe your listeners won't have heard of this before, but there's a company called FX Home who make a product called Hit Film, which is it's a compositing and editing tool which gets used a lot by YouTube video makers, and you know it's really designed for that sort of prosumer market. And we actually did a bundling agreement with them back in the summer last year, so that they now have a version of Mocha that's specialized to work with their software, and that's actually using our 3D camera tracker that we developed last year.
Yeah, and it's very much like a sort of a light version, really, isn't it? I mean, well, an easier version.
What, Hit Film? Or
yeah, the way that works. Yeah,
yeah, that exactly. It's just you know, all the same core tools that we have in Mocha Pro, but without some of the more advanced capabilities like the Remove module, and it will only export to the particular packages that you're using, like After Effects and Hit Film.
Now, the 3D tracking that you just mentioned, let's discuss that. And in particular, I guess related to that is the ability to solve lens distortion.
Right. For us, those are actually two completely separate areas. So I'll just talk about the lens distortion. That came in when we were working on Monet, because we needed to match the lens distortion on the cameras that were being used for Harry Potter. And our lens solver is perhaps typical of the kind of lens solvers that you get for in some of the 3D camera tracking packages, but it will detect lines in the scene. You pick lines which are straight in the real world, and then it will solve a lens distortion model that fits those. And that's something that has been in the software for quite a long time, but recently we've started doing a bit more with it.
Because you can now export it, right?
That's right, yeah. You can now make an ST map and take it into Nuke, or you can bring an ST map in from Nuke, or you know, or any application that supports like UV map lens distortions. We've really put a bit of effort into that recently to make it more usable in inside a pipeline rather than just isolated inside Mocha.
And the camera tracker itself, let's discuss that.
Yeah, so the camera solver, this is again something that people had asked us for a long time. You know, they'd seen, well, you've got a fantastic track of this planar object, and well, we've tracked multiple planes in the scene. Can we get that in 3D? So starting a couple of years ago, we thought, well, okay, let's finally try and do it. And it was probably the biggest bit of computer vision research we'd done since developing Monet back in 2004. What we did was develop some new algorithms that allow us to take multiple planes in a scene that tracked with the planar tracker in the normal way, and then solve the camera motion for those planes. So we get an actual 3D camera that we can export to any application that works in 3D, and also solve, if we have moving planes relative to the camera, we can solve the object motion and export that as well.
And so your primary export function for the 3D camera, notwithstanding, I think, After Effects, is FBX, right?
That's right, yeah.
Which therefore means you can export this from everything from Maya to Flame, presumably.
Yeah, I mean, most 3D applications support FBX, so that's why we went for that straight away. We'll probably be adding Alembic at some point, as that's the format of the future, I think.
Yeah, Alembic does seem to be very popular, very fast take-up. And so in the current version 3.1, which is, I guess, the sort of mainstay of all of this work, and certainly, you know, the shorthand for the product that the Academy's supporting, you've done a bunch of other stuff, right? I mean, you can now support R3D files directly and stuff. Talk to me about the latest version and where it's at today.
Yeah, so the latest version, Mocha 3.1, the key things we did there was, as you mentioned, we're supporting R3D files. So people can now have a workflow using Red files all the way through to Mocha, particularly useful for people doing grading or also surprisingly for the After Effects people who often will work with Red files rather than converting to an intermediate format. And the other big thing we did in 3.1 was the lens distortion improvements that I mentioned. So being able to, we actually made some pretty substantial improvements to the solver and in the lens distortion module just to give more reliable results more quickly. And also the import and export. So we never had import of lens data before. So the idea really is that Mocha can now sit in a feature film visual effects pipeline where we've got a lens solve from somewhere else, maybe from the 3D camera solver. We've got that as an ST map, which is being used in Nuke for compositing. And then when someone wants to jump out of Nuke into Mocha to do something that we're good at, like do some rotoscoping or something like that, then they have the lens solved already and they can use that same solve inside Mocha. So the results are going to be valid in the rest of the pipeline. And then also, equally, they can solve the lens in Mocha and get that result and use it elsewhere in the process.
So the planar tracker that's in this version, how much is that sort of directly the one from the Guildford days of old, 2001 when you joined, and how much has it been completely rewritten and revamped?
Well, a lot of the, the concept is exactly as it was back in the start. And some of the key pieces of code behind that are actually the same. But the big things that we've done over the years are we've vastly improved the performance. It's multi-threaded when it used to be single-threaded, and lots of step-by-step software engineering improvements to it to make it more usable, give more results in more situations, and more robust results in difficult shots. But fundamentally, it's the same concept that we developed back in 2001.
The multi-threading makes a difference because doing a point track is relatively simple compared to the maths you guys have to do.
Yeah, it's because we're looking at the whole area at once. It's not like we have a natural decomposition of the work into tracking lots of individual points. So threading in the tracker is a challenge. I don't feel like we have the best threading ever at the moment, and there's certainly areas we could improve the performance. But we tend to, when we're looking at what are we going to do next, we tend to ask our customers, and surprisingly few people say it's slow. Improve the performance. We always get requests for other areas. So, seems like customers feel the performance is good enough, and it will stay that way until we have a real demand to change it.
So talk to me about the award that that you're getting on February 9th at the Beverly Hills Hotel for the SciTech Awards. It's the Academy plaque, but who are you receiving with? There are four of you that are going up, I guess.
Yes, there's four. Sorry, yeah, the original founders, so Alan, Yannicka, and Phil McLaughlin. So Phil was the real computer vision researcher behind this, and he developed the algorithms behind the planar tracker. And Alan, who worked with him right at the start, working on the software engineering side.
Though Alan quickly took to the road to spread the word, didn't he?
Yeah. Alan was the CEO from 2000 through to 2009, and he very much moved into a sales and business development position, although he still did software development up to probably about 2004-5, something like that. And then the other person on there is Ross Shane, who's our chief marketing officer now, and he's done a lot of the user interface design and user experience improvements and general usability improvements that we've seen in the software in the last few years. So really taking what we had in Moki and Monet, which was software that was usable but not didn't have the ideal user interface for what we wanted to do. And then he really substantially improved the user experience of the software so that it can work much better on large-scale projects and it's much more intuitive for people moving from other applications.
So talk to me about some of the more recent projects, because obviously it's very much in production right now that are using the product.
Let me think the most recent interesting ones. Well, a couple of good examples, not the most recent, but in the last couple of years. One was Black Swan. And there's a particular shot where they wanted to. It was actually the sort of swan transformation scene, where the feathers sprout out of her arms, and they wanted to be able to apply feathers onto the arms while, you know, she was dancing. And the arms were particularly bad things to track, and that was an area where they were able to use the planar tracker, just tracking her skin basically, you know, with no tracking markers or no high contrast features or anything like that, and then apply the feathers on. And another one was in Invictus, where they used it for digital makeup throughout the movie. All the cuts and bruises and dirt and things like that on the actors were all applied in post, and that was done by tracking bits of face and skin in mocha, and then compositing on the dirt and bruises and so on. And that's one area where we've really seen mocha being used a lot recently, is in digital makeup and beauty work. Because it's very good at tracking sort of rough patches of skin or something like that, where there aren't really any obvious features to track.
I was going to mention that because we just published a story on Grimm on FX Guide, and I seem to remember that was also a presentation at SIDGRAPH by you guys, which again, you know, it's like more than digital makeup now, it's like face transformations.
Yeah, they were doing face replacements, and mocha was used extensively on Grimm.
Hive Effects, I think.
Yeah, Hive Effects, yeah.
Which begs the question, where to next for the product? Is it a matter of refining that camera tracking work? Are you looking to do more object tracking inside a camera tracking environment that isn't planar-based? Or where's the sort of interesting areas of research for you? I'm not committing to a timeline or a product, but just in terms of research, what interests you?
Yeah, I guess there's probably three areas for us at the moment. One is the camera tracker, as you mentioned. So we released the first version of that back at NAB last year. And one of the things we want to improve there is the interaction with it. So at the moment, you can solve and then you can export the data to other applications. But we want to, there are clearly a lot of tools that we could build around the 3D camera tracker. And that's an area where we're going to be concentrating in the future. Another one is in rotoscoping. And there's, we've got some very interesting technology in development for rotoscoping, which would help with tracking and rotoscoping organic shapes, things that are deforming rather than are rigid. So it should be a big improvement for tracking things like people and hands and anything that deforms. And another area is taking mocha into actual stereoscopic and multi-camera workflows. So at the moment, it's a 2D tool. You can only track on a single stream of footage. So we're completely changing the architecture so that we can have stereo shots shot with a stereo camera rig, and also shots where we've got witness cameras or extra views of the same scene, and combine them all together and get tracking results from them.
Now, those tracking results are by that. Well, so explain how that would work, because multiple cameras shooting, like witness cameras, I mean, a stereoscopic offset, I can see obviously parallels between knowing something from camera A and giving it to camera B or from right to left, but a witness camera, that's going to be way off axis normally. Would that not mean that the planar tracker would not be well informed by it?
It depends. And that, I mean, this is an area of live research for us at the moment.
Right.
But yeah, we're working on new algorithms that will allow us to take what we do with the planar tracker and also apply it to this kind of problem. And yeah, that's a really new area for us. What will come out of it will probably be a combination of what we've done on the 3D camera tracking side and the planar tracking.
Yeah, I mean, there are an enormous amount of 2D type workflows now. I mean, especially camera projection type workflows that we see so prevalently in Nuke that just benefit so much from the stuff that you've got. I imagine that there'll be a whole lot of new stuff that will come out. It's just hard to imagine what that will be until you see it. And of course, once you see it, you imagine how we ever live without it. As we look at the Academy Awards and beyond, presumably the company's intending to be at NAB this year.
Yeah, we'll be there in the plug-in pavilion, as always.
Excellent. Well, look, it's been so great for you taking time to talk to us. And congratulations again. I mean, it's a great honour. It's a great night. And I'm really glad that you guys have been recognised.
Thanks very much.
Well, I just want to thank Ben again and leave that interview there. Obviously, a terrific product, and we're just couldn't be happier to see these guys recognised by the Academy. It's a great night, and we've got more SciTech coverage coming up on the site. Also, hopefully Jeff will be back with you next week. If you want to check out that Mocha training course, it's over at FXPhD, as I said at the outset. And thanks so much for being with us. Until next time, I'm Mike Seymour. On behalf of Jeff, John and myself, see ya.
Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by clicking the Contact Us link at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright FX Guide, LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide.